For example, a client told me, "The spirit has a diversity and complex fluid quality beyond my ability adequately to interpret." Many former clients write me about how viewing their immortality changed their lives. Here is a sample of one letter. "One, have gained an indescribable sense of joy and freedom from learning my true identity. The amazing thing is, that this knowledge was in my mind all the time. Seeing my non-judgmental master teachers left me in a glowing state. The insight that came to me was that the only thing of true importance in this material life is the way we live and how we treat other people. There. Circumstances of our life mean nothing compared to our compassion and acceptance of others. I now have a knowing rather than a feeling about why I am here and where I am going after death. I present my findings involving the six Tyson cases and numerous quotes in this book as a reporter and a messenger. Before I begin every lecture to the public, I explain to my audiences that what I have to say are my truths about our spiritual life. There are many doorways to the truth. My truths come from accumulation of great wisdom from multitudes of people who have graced my life as clients over many years. If I make statements that go against your preconceptions, faith, or personal philosophy, please take what fits well for you and discard the rest. Death, grief and comfort. Denial and acceptance. Surviving the loss of a love is one of life's hardest trials. It is well known that their process of grief survival involves going through the initial shock, then coping with denial, anger, depression and finally arriving at some sort of acceptance. Each one of these stages of emotional turmoil varies in length of time and intensity from months up to years. Losing someone with whom we had a deep bond can bring such despair that it feels as though we are in a bottomless pit where escape is impossible because death seems so final. In Western society, the belief in the finality of death is an obstacle to healing. We have a dynamic culture where the possibility of our loss of personhood is unthinkable. The dynamics of death in a loving family is akin to a successful stage play that is thrown into disarray due to the loss of one of its stars. The supporting cast flounders around over the need for script changes. Dealing with this huge hole in the story left by the departed affects the future roles of the remaining players. There is a dichotomy here because when souls are in the spirit world preparing for a new life, they laugh about being in rehearsals for their next big stage play on Earth. They know all roles are temporary. In our culture, we do not prepare properly for death during life because it is something we cannot fix or change. The apprehension about death begins to gnaw at us as we get older. It is always there, lurking in the shadows, regardless of our beliefs about what happens after death. In discussing life after death on my lecture tours, I was surprised to find that many people who held very traditional religious views seemed to be the most fearful of death. The fear for most of us comes from the unknown. Unless we have had a near-death experience or undergone a past life regression where we remember what death felt like in a former life, death is a mystery. When we must face death either as a participant or as an observer, it can be painful, sad and frightening. The healthy don't want to talk about it and frequently neither do the seriously ill. Thus, our culture views death as an abhorrence. In the 20th century there were many changes in public attitudes about life after death. During the early decades of the century most people held traditional views that they had only one life to live. In the last third of the 20th century in the US it was estimated some 40% believed in reincarnation. This change in attitude has made acceptance of death a little easier for those people who have become more spiritual and are pulling away from a belief in oblivion after life. One of the most meaningful aspects of my work in the spirit world is learning from the perspective of the departed soul what it feels like to die and how souls try to reach back and comfort those left behind. In this chapter, one hopes to validate that what you sense deep inside after a loss is not just wishful thinking. The person you love is not really gone. Consider, too, what I said in the last chapter about soul duality. Part of your energy was left behind in the spirit world at the time of incarnation. When your love arrives back home again, you will already be the waiting with that portion of your energy which was left behind. This same energy is held in reserve for unification with the returning soul. One of the significant revelations of my research was to learn that soulmates are never truly apart from each other. The sections that follow illustrate certain methods used by souls to communicate with those they love. These techniques may begin right after physical death and can be very intense. Nevertheless, the departing soul is anxious to get moving on their way home, as the density of Earth does drain energy. In death, suddenly the soul is released and given freedom. Yet if we have the need, souls are able to contact us on a regular basis from the spirit world. Quiet contemplation and meditation should bring a greater receptivity to the departed and provide your consciousness with a heightened sense of awareness. No verbal messages from the other side are necessary. Thus removing the blocks of self-doubt and opening your mind to even the possible presence of someone you love will assist the process of grief recovery. Therapeutic techniques of souls. My opening case is that of an advanced soul named Tamina who is in training to be a student guide. He said to me, "I have been incarnating and dying on Earth for thousands of years and only in the last few centuries am I really getting the hang of how to alter negative thought patterns and calm people." This case begins at the point in our session where Tamina is describing the moments following his sudden death after a former life. Case 1. S. Subject: My wife is not feeling my presence. I'm just not getting through to her at all right now. Dr. N. What is the matter? S. Too much grief. It is so overpowering. Alice is in such a state of shock over my being killed that she is too numb to feel my energy. Dr. N. Tamino. Has this been a recurring problem for you after your former lives, or is it just Alice? S. Right after death the people who love you are either very agitated or completely numb. In either situation their minds can shut down. My task is to attempt a balancing of mind and body. Dr. N. Where is your soul at this moment? S. On the ceiling of our bedroom. Dr. N. What do you want her to do? S. Stop crying and focus her thoughts. She doesn't believe I could still be alive, so all her energy patterns are in a terrible tangled mass. It's so frustrating. I'm right next to her and she doesn't know it. Dr. N. Are you going to give up for the moment and leave for the spirit world because her mind is closed down? S. That would be the easy way for me but not for her. I care for her too much to give up now. I won't go until she at least senses that someone is in this room with her. That is my first step. Then I will be able to do more. Dr. N. How long has it been since your death? S. A couple of days. The funeral is over and that is when I settle down to try and comfort Alice. Dr. N. I suppose your own guide is waiting to escort you home. S. Laughs. I have informed my guardian that she would have to wait for me a while, which was unnecessary. She knows about all this. Ian was the one who taught me. This case demonstrates a common complaint I hear from newly released souls. Many are not as proficient or determined as Tamino. Even so, most souls who are anxious to depart for the spirit world will not leave Earth's astral plane until they take some sort of action to comfort those in distress who care about them. I have condensed this client's narrative of how he assisted Alice in her grief recovery in order to focus on the soothing effects of soul energy patterns on disrupted human energy. Dr. N. Tamino, I would appreciate your taking me through the techniques you use to help your wife Alice with her grief. S. Well, I'll start by telling you Alice has not lost me. Takes a deep breath. One began by throwing out a shower of my energy as an umbrella from Alice's waist to her head. Dr. N. If I were a spirit standing next to you, what would this look like? S. Smiles, a cloud of cotton candy. Dr. N. What does this do? S. It gives Alice a blanket of mental warmth which is calming. I must tell you I'm not fully proficient with this cloaking yet. But I have placed a protective cloud of energy over Alice the past 3 days since my death to make her more receptive. Dr. N. Oh, I see, you have already begun your work with Alice. Okay, Tamino, what do you do now? S. I begin to filter certain aspects of myself through the cloud of energy around her until I can feel the point where there is the least amount of blockage. Pause. I find it on the left side of her head behind her ear. Dr. N, does this spot have some significance? S. Alice used to love to have me kiss her ears. Memories of caressing points are meaningful. When I see the opening on the left side of her head, I convert my energy to a solid beam and train it on that place. Dr. N, does your wife feel this right away? S. Alice is aware of a gentle touch in the beginning, but the awareness is fragmented by grief. Then I increase the power of my beam, sending her thoughts of love. Dr. N, do you see this working? S. Happily, yes. One, detect new energy patterns that are no longer dark coming from mice. There are shifts in her emotions. Her crying stops. She is looking around, sensing me. She smiles. Now, I've got her. Dr. N, are you finished? S, she is going to be all right. It's time for me to go. I'll watch over her, but I know she is going to make it through this, and that's good because I'm going to be busy myself for a while. Dr. N, does this mean you won't contact Alice further? S, offended, certainly not. I will remain in contact whenever she needs me. She is my love. The average soul is much less skillful than even the most junior of student guides. I will discuss these elements further in Chapter 4 under the sections of energy rehabilitation. Still, most souls I work with perform rather well from the spirit world on a physical body. Typically, they choose to work in concentrated areas using the beam effect described by Tamino. These loving energy projections can be very potent, even from the inexperienced soul, to people who have sustained emotional and physical trauma. Eastern practices of yoga and meditation include the use of chakra body points in ways that resemble how souls partition the human body with healing energy. People who practice the art of chakra healing say that since we have an etheric body that exists in conjunction with the physical, healing must take into account both these elements. Chakra work includes unblocking our emotional and spiritual energy through various points of the body, from the spine, heart, throat, forehead and so forth, to open and harmonize the body. Ways spirits connect with the living. Somatic touch. I have taken the clinical terms of somatic bridging and therapeutic touch and combined them to describe the method by which discarnate souls use directed energy beams to touch various parts of an incarnated body. Healing is not limited to the chakra body points I spoke about earlier. Souls who are reaching back to comfort the living look for areas that are most receptive to their energy. We saw this in case 1. Behind the left ear. The energy pattern becomes therapeutic when bridges are established to connect the two minds of the sender and receiver in telepathic transmission. Bridging by thought transmissions to a body which is hurting is somatic when the methods are physiological. It involves the subtle touching of body organs while eliciting certain emotional reactions, which can include the use of the senses. Skillfully applied energy beams can evoke recognition by sight, sound, taste and smell. The whole idea with recognition is to convince the person grieving that the individual they love is still alive. The purpose of somatic touch is to allow the grief-stricken person to come to terms with their loss by acquiring an awareness that absence is only a change of reality and not final. Hopefully, this will allow the bereaved to move on and complete their own life constructively. Souls are also quite capable of falling into habit patterns with somatic touch. The next case is an example of a 49-year-old man who had died of cancer. While the soul of this man does not demonstrate much skill, his intentions are good. Case 2. Dr. N, what technique do you use to reach out to your wife? S. Oh, my old standby, the center of the chest. Dr. N, where exactly on the chest? S. I direct my energy beam right at the heart. If I'm a little off, it doesn't matter. Dr. N, and why is this method successful for you? S. I am on the ceiling and she is bent over, crying. My first shot causes her to straighten up. She sighs deeply and senses something and looks upward. Then one use my scatter technique. Dr. N, what is that? S, smiles, O, you know, throwing energy in all directions from a central point on the ceiling. Usually one of those bolts reaches the right place. The head, anywhere. Dr. N, but what determines the right place? S, that which is not blocked by negative energy, of course. Compare the difference between case 2 and the next client who carefully spreads her energy in a focused area as if she was applying icing on a cake. Case 3. Dr. N, please describe the manner in which you are going to help your husband with your energy. S, I'm going to work the base of the head just above the spine. God, Kevin is suffering so much. I just won't leave until he feels better. Dr. N, why this particular spot? S, because I know he enjoyed having the back of his neck rubbed by me, so it is an area where he is more receptive to my vibrational imprint. Then I play this area as if I was doing body massage, which I am, actually. Dr. N, play the area. S, my subject giggles and holds her hand out in front of her, opening up 5 fingers wide. Yes, I spread my energy and resonate myself by touch. Then, I use both hands cupped around each side of Kevin's head for maximum effect. Dr. N, does he know it is you? S, with a wicked smile, oh, he realizes it must be me all right. No one else can do what I do to him and it only takes me a minute. Dr. N, isn't he going to miss this after you return to the spirit world? S, I thought you knew about such things. I can come back whenever he really gets down in the dumps and yearns for me. Dr. N, just asking. I don't mean to be insensitive, but what if Kevin eventually meets another woman in this life? S, I'll be delighted if he finds happiness again. That is a testimony as to how good we were together. Our life with each other, every scene, is never lost, and can be recaptured and played again in the spirit world. Just about the time I think I am getting a complete grasp of soul capabilities and their limitations, a client will come along to dispel these faulty notions. For a long while I told people that all souls seemed to have difficulties getting past the uncontrolled sobs of the grieving before they could go to work with healing energy. Here is a short quote from a level 3 whose tactical approach during the peak of the grief process proved me wrong. I am not delayed by people who are crying hard. My technique is to coordinate my vibrational resonance with the tonal variations of their vocal cords and then springboard to the brain. In this way I can align my energy to effect a more rapid melding of my essence with their body. Quite soon they stop crying, without knowing why. Personification with objects. I have heard some fascinating stories about the use of familiar objects, such as with the man in my next case. Since husbands usually die ahead of their wives, I do hear more about energy techniques from their perspective. This does not mean male-oriented souls are more proficient with healing because they get more practice at comforting. The soul in case 4 has been just as effective in former lives, as a woman who preceded her husband in death, as a husband in this life. Case 4. Dr. N, what do you do if your efforts right after death are not having the desired results anywhere on the body? S, when I found that my wife, Helen, was not receiving me by a direct approach, I finally resorted to working with a household familiar. Dr. N, you mean with an animal, a cat or dog? S, I have used them before. But no, not this time. I decided to pick out some object of value to me that my wife would know was very personal. I chose my ring. At this point my subject explained to me that during this past life he always wore a large ring of Indian design with a raised turquoise stone in the center. He and his wife often sat by the fire talking about their day. He had a habit of rubbing the stone while talking to Helen. His wife often kidded him about polishing the turquoise down to the metal base of the ring. Helen had once reminded him that she had noticed this nervous manner as the night they met. Dr. N, I think I understand about the ring, so what did you do with it as a spirit? S, when I work with objects and people I have to wait until the scene is very tranquil. 3 weeks after my death, Helen lit a fire and was looking into it with tears in her eyes. I began by wrapping my energy within the fire itself, using the fire as a conduit of warmth and elasticity. Dr. N, excuse my interruption, but what does elasticity mean? S, it took me centuries to learn this. Elastic energy is fluid. To make my soul energy fluid requires intense concentration and practice because it must be thin and fleecy. The fire serves as a catalyst in this maneuver. Dr. N, which is just the opposite from a strong, narrow beam of energy. S, exactly. I can be very effective by rapidly shifting my energy from a fluid to a solid state and back again. The shifting is subtle but it awakens the human mind. Note, others have also told me this technique of energy shape-shifting tickles the human brain. Dr. N, interesting, please continue. S, Helen was connecting with the fire and thus with me. For a moment the grief was less oppressive, and I moved straight into the top of her head. She felt my presence, slightly. It was not enough. Then I began shifting my energy as I told you, from hard to soft in fork fashion. Dr. N, what do you do when you fork energy? S, I split it. While keeping a soft fluid energy on Helen's head to maintain contact, I fork a hard beam at the box which holds my ring in a table drawer. My intent is to open up a smooth pathway from her mind to the ring. This is why I am using a hard steady beam, to direct her to the ring. Dr. N, what does Helen do next? S, with my guidance, she slowly gets up without knowing why. She moves, as if sleepwalking, to the table and hesitates. Then she opens the drawer. Since my ring is in the box, I continue to shift back and forth from her mind to the lid of the box. Helen opens it and takes out my ring, holding it in her left hand, with a deep sigh, then I know I have her. Dr. N, because? S, because the ring still retains some of my energy. Don't you see? She is feeling my energy on both ends of the fork. This is a toe-directional signal. Very effective. Dr. N, oh, I do see, then what do you do with Helen? S, now, I move into overdrive with a full power bridge between myself standing on her right side and the ring on the left. She turns in my direction and smiles. Helen then kisses my ring and says, thanks, darling, I know you are with me now. I'll try and be more brave. I want to encourage anyone who is in a terrible state of grief over the loss of a love to do what the gifted psychics do when they want to find missing persons. Take a piece of jewelry, an article of clothing, anything that belonged to the departed person, and hold it for a while in a mutually familiar place and quietly open your mind, while blanking out all other irrelevant thoughts. Before leaving this section, I want to relate my favorite story about energy contact through objects from a discarnate being. My wife, Peggy, is an oncology nurse with a graduate degree in counseling, so she involves herself a great deal with grieving cancer patients and their families. Because she administers chemotherapy at a hospital, this puts her in touch with hospice personnel. A few of these women and my wife are close friends who meet regularly as a support group. One of the members of the group is a recent widow whose husband, Clay, died of cancer. Clay loved big band dancing and he and his wife would often go on road trips to where the best bands were playing. One night after Clay's death, his widow, my wife and the rest of the support group were in a circle in the middle of this lady's living room floor talking about my theories of how souls reach back to comfort the people they love. The widow exclaimed in frustration, "Why hasn't Clay made himself known all in a way that would comfort me?" There was a moment of silence and suddenly a music box on top of a bookshelf began to play Glenn Miller's song In the Mood. From what I understand, there was a stunned silence followed by nervous laughter from the group. All the widow could say was, that music box hasn't been touched in 2 years. It didn't matter. I think she got Clay's message. Light energy has some properties of electromagnetic force, and thus can work in mysterious ways with objects. Joanne and Jim are two former clients of mine whose marriage is a very close one. After their sessions, we got into a discussion of the use of energy beams by the living. Sheepishly, they told me they combine their energy on the California freeways to push cars out of the fast lane in front of them when they are in a hurry. When one asked if they tailgate, they said, "No, we just direct a combined beam to the back of the driver's head and then fork the beam to the right, middle lane, and back again." They claimed that over 50% of the time they are successful. One told Joanne and Jim, half seriously, that pushing cars out of their way was clearly a misuse of power and they had better mend their ways. "I think they both know that using their gift more constructively will be much better received upstairs, although it will be a hard habit to break." Dream recognition. One of the primary ways the newly departed soul uses to reach people who love them is through the dream state. The grief that has overwhelmed the conscious mind is temporarily pushed out of a frontal position in our thoughts when we are asleep. Even if we are in a fitful state of sleep, the unconscious mind is now more open for reception. Unfortunately, the person who is grieving will all too often wake up from a dream that could have contained a message and allow it to slip away from memory without writing anything down. Either the images and symbols they saw while asleep didn't mean anything at the time, or the dream sequence was chalked off as wishful thinking if, for example, the dreamer saw themselves with the deceased. Before proceeding further, I want to offer an assessment about the general nature of dreams. My professional experience with dreams stems from listening to subjects in hypnosis explain how, as discarnates, they use the dream state to reach the living. Spirits are very selective in their use of our dream sequences. I have come to the conclusion that most dreams are not profound. In reviewing various texts about dreaming, I find even specialists in the field believe many dreams during the night are simply jumbled up absurdities caused by our circuits being on overload throughout the day. If the mind is venting during certain sleep cycles, then the nerve transmissions across our synaptic clefts are letting off steam to relax the brain. I classify dreams in three ways, and one of them is the cleaning house state. At times in the night, many stray thoughts from the day are scrambled and swept out of the mind as gobbledygook. We can't make sense of it because there is none. On the other hand, we all know there is a more cognitive side to dreaming. I divide this state into two parts, problem-solving and spiritual, with only a fine line between them. There are people who have been given a premonition about some future event, as an outgrowth of dreams. Our state of mind may be altered by dreams. One of the most stressful periods of our lives occurs during the period of mourning when the affections of someone we love are taken away from us, we think forever. About the only relief we get from oppressive grief is during sleep. We go to bed with anguish and wake up with the pain still there, yet there is enigma in between. Some mornings bring us a better idea of the initial steps to take toward coping with our loss. Problem solving through dream sequences is a process of mental incubation which has been called procedural because images appear that teach us ways to move forward. Does this insight come from somewhere other than ourselves? If the dream spills over into the spirit mode, then the dreamweavers have probably paid us a call as prompters to assist us through our emotional distress. Spiritual dreams involve our guides, teaching souls and soulmates who come as messengers to assist us with solutions. We do not need to be grieving to receive help in this way. Into this spiritual dream mixture we also have memory recall of our experiences on other physical and mental worlds, including the spirit world. How many of you have dreamed you could fly or swim easily underwater? I have found with some clients that these mythic memories contain information about the lives they led as intelligent flying or water creatures on other planets. Frequently, these kinds of dream sequences provide us with metaphoric clues which open the door to comparisons of former lives with our current one. Our immortal soul character does not change much between host bodies, so these comparisons are not all that bizarre. Some of our greatest revelations come from the episodic dreams of events, places and behavior patterns emanating from experiences before we acquired our present body. In Chapter 1.1 briefly touched on the preparation class we attend in the spirit world before returning to a new life. This soul exercise is I read more thoroughly in my first book, but I mention it here because this experience is relevant to our dreams. The class is designed for recognition of future people and events. While we prepare to incarnate, a teacher reinforces the important aspects of our new light contract, meeting and interacting with souls from our group and other clusters who are to share parts of our new life form an integral part of the class.